Your favorite Lagos Talks podcasts are now available on all online podcast platforms. Simply search for Lagos Talks 913 on your preferred podcast platform. Lagos Talks 91.3.
Join the conversation.
So we are live right here in the beautiful city of Lagos. This is Lagos Talks 91.3 FM and my name is Oluwakade. We're getting into an exclusive interaction with an industry expert, someone who understands the intrigues of what happens in Nigerian oil and gas industry. And today we want to focus on the upstream market. So much is happening. A few months ago, about sometime last year, we heard a talk about, the oil rig bidding. Licenses reviewed and a couple of things happening in that sector, and from all indications it feels like it wasn't a very successful bidding process or bidding era, and we're back at that sometime soon. We're getting into that process again, so we want to understand, so much happens in Nigeria that we don't even get to understand the intrigues of all this. So much is happening, and Nigerians, we look away. Nigerians focus more on the politics than politicians themselves. We ignore the governance bit, but on this show, we try to bring you up to speed on what really is happening. To do this analysis with us this morning, for us to have that review of what is happening in Nigeria, we're bringing on board an expert in the oil and gas industry, someone who has studied written papers and has contributed to acts and other processes and policies in this sector. He's a lawyer and he's a partner at Peck Stones and Gray legal practitioners. His name is Tolulokwe Aderemi. Mr. Aderemi, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Good to have you join us this morning. And it's good to have you, though. It's been a while since you took part in any of our programs.
Well, and thanks to the organization, we have also been a bit more involved in advocacy for the reform of justice system.
True.
So we're doing a lot of that with the courts now, whether at the Federal High Court or at subnational court level. So quite a number of things, going on at the same time, all in the bid to get Nigeria working. And I think we'll get it right.
Yeah, we don't have a choice, do we? Now, there is, we're about to begin another process of bidding for oil. We hear so much being spoken about this oil and gas sector. And one of the most confusing things are the terminologies that are used. You hear the OML, the OPL, you hear the JV, you hear this and that. And Nigerians don't really know what belongs to Nigeria or how all these things function. So take us through that process. First of all, when you talk about oil bidding process, what does that mean? In reality, then how does it affect a Nigerian, if it affects a Nigerian at all? Let's start from that basics.
All right, Kaori, thank you very much. So the heart and the soul of the oil industry is divided into two parts. There's a part I call the principal part, and another part I call the subsidiary part. The principal part is the part known as the upstream, whilst the subsidiary part, not as important, but not as important as the principal part, which is the downstream. Now, under the new dispensation, we have it as upstream, midstream, and downstream. What does upstream really mean? Upstream simply are the guys who go underwater to go and extract the oil. You see, oil is meaningless unless somebody brings it out and gives value to it, and that is why. You see, whilst it's in situ, it's underground, it belongs to government, absolutely. But once it's brought out, from underwater, then the ownership rights starts getting diluted. So government owns part of the participating interest. The private sector has spent its money, would also own part of the participating interest. So in summary, that's upstream. Now, the midstream and downstream is a combination of how you transport the crude oil once you brought it out from underwater, how you simply transport it, to the refinery, right? And then how you transport it from the refinery in a usable format, which is what we know as PFs and other associated products. You transport it to the ultimate user. So that's mid and that's downstream. But I think our focus for this morning is the upstream. And so going back to your question, what is the essence of a bid round? Now, you see, in the upstream, like I did earlier, the oil in situ belongs to government. And so government essentially owns its entire concession. And this is by law. Quite unlike law in the U.S. You see, law in the U.S. is that if I successfully find oil under the ground in my company, it belongs to me. And so what I simply will do is simply to pay taxes to government. Our law in Nigeria is quite different. And our law says the petroleum products or the crude oil, I beg pardon, belongs to government. Now, it belongs to government in trust for the people. And so that part of it is quite important. What we're doing now, in terms of what the Nigerian Upstream Regulatory Commission, which is the regulator for the industry, is doing is now looking for a scope for bidders. Now, this is quite an expensive venture that government itself, you know, cannot run with its own resources. So it needs partners to work with it. And to get those partners, you must open up what is known as a bid round to establish partners who are competent, whether in terms of financial capacity, who are also technically competent to be able to deploy the appropriate technology to bring out the, because quite an intensive, expensive, and technically savvy market, you know, operating. So you need to have the right partners. Otherwise, you'll be faced with, you know, abandonment, not in the term used oil and gas, but abandonment of, you know, the wells, which many of the successful bidders, you know, have been accused of very recently.
All right. So now, I mean, still for the purpose of education, when you talk about we having a new bidding round, does it mean we've withdrawn the licenses? Does it mean we've discovered new wells? Does it mean what really goes on? Why do we need new bidding rounds?
Thank you very much. So, when you and let me start from 2022. So, you see, in 2022, we had what was known as a mid-bid round. In 2022, we had marginal field bid round. Now, why do you keep having bid rounds? You have bid rounds because you have wells, or you have fields, or you have blocks that are not being explored or not being worked upon, to use it mildly. And you are inviting bidders to come and work on them. Now, to your particular specific question, why do we have wells that haven't been worked on? Truth of the matter is, and I take you as an example, let's say I am government, Kayode is you're a successful leader based on the documentation you have submitted to me through the pre-bid and the technical and commercial phases. I have judged you based on what you have presented to me as your capacity to be able to walk the field. Now, you successfully win the asset and then you fail to develop. Most times, why do they fail to develop? They fail to develop because some of these bids are cooked up. Some of these bids are, there's no other way I can use it. I'm trying to use a better word, but they're just simply cooked up for the purpose of bidding for the blocks. And so when you put a cooked up document and you win the block, you have no capacity to run it. In some other very rare cases, some of the winners even take those assets on the back of which they go to raise funding. And when they successfully raise the funding, they divert it elsewhere. So most of the times, our blocks are left fallow. Now, what happens? You are not able to pay your signature bonus. And once you can't pay your signature bonus, and signature bonus simply just, I think we've discussed it on the platform before, it just means what you pay as rent to government, you know, working on that thing.
And that's what that part of the income for government.
Absolutely. And so once you are not able to meet that payment obligation, then you really have no right to even move to SAT. Are you with me?
Okay.
And so you find it all the time. And once you have not paid that bonus, then the asset simply goes back into the coffers of the kitty of a government, what we call an open accredit list. Once it's an open accredit list, before the official announcement of an open bidding round, government even allows anybody who is interested in such assets to come in, identify it, go into a data room, assess the data, and once you're comfortable with it, pay the signature bonus and move to site.
Okay.
So the reason, a short answer to your question, is those assets are assets that have either been abandoned or have not been, the owners or the winners have not been able to fulfill their financial obligations towards the government, or they are part of assets that have been revoked. Their licenses have been revoked by government. And so it's a combination of, we do not necessarily have new fields like that. Constantly, okay. I'm sure you're aware of coal mining assets in the north, where government is doing a lot
exploitation
to discover oil. So those are some very few ones. But essentially, most of what we have, for example, these two onshore and deep water assets are assets, you know, that are a combination of existing OPLs, some of them have transited into OMLs. And of course, the same deep water assets form part of the 2022 mini bid round that was unsuccessful, if I must say.
Now, 2022 mini bid round was unsuccessful. We'll come to that. But right now, when you look at what we have in our country, what really is, you were speaking about, if you withdraw the license, you could get interested bidders. That means it's not entirely open. Can you tell us the different kinds of bidding rounds that we have? I've heard you mention mini. I've heard you. What are these kind of bidding rounds, and at what point do you apply them?
All right. So I think that moment is to say there are some times we have what is called a discretionary award.
Okay. Discretionary award. Okay.
Award.
All right.
A discretionary award is when the president, you know, government just decides to award a particular asset to a particular company because of proven track record. So I'm sure you probably would have followed the issue around the Calabar, the Lagos Calabar Coastal Road, with the allegations that it was simply awarded to the Shagori brothers.
Yes.
Without the necessary, those were allegations, but that is true. That is an example of a discretionary award. But discretionary awards have been discouraged, you know, because over time, we've seen that it's been grossly abused. So that's one. The second one are the general bid rounds. Now, bid rounds, and we don't have variants of them. There's only one bid round. And bid rounds are important because it gives certainty to investors and businesses. You also have credibility, I must add, because there are guidelines to the bid rounds. You understand what exactly is required of you as a bidder. You understand what government obligations are. You understand what the limits of the powers of the minister is, particularly when it comes to giving consent.
Okay.
You know, to because at the last stage, you have to sign a contract agreement, and the minister will provide his consent to it. And when he doesn't, within a certain period, it is deemed that he's giving consent. So an elaborate process, you know, which gives comfort to the industry. Now, the concessionaire or the regulator, I beg your pardon, also has the discretion in between one bid round and the next bid round. Now, unlike in the power sector, when you're discussing tariffs, we don't have specific timelines to say, look, this is when we're to conduct a bid round.
Okay.
Are you with me? So it's based on needs. So, for example, the bid round of the mini bid round was probably based on need for injection of effects into the country. Mm-hmm. I'm sure this main bid round we have now is also not all connected, one, to the fact that 2022, the last mini bid round was unsuccessful. Even the Major Field bid round, I don't know whether you recall, of 2021 or thereabout, out of about 60 licenses that were awarded, only about 5 have moved to site and are producing.
Wow.
So out of 60. Out of 60. So leaving almost 55, you know, all lying fallow. Now, what will the regulator do? The regulator will not sit and watch. These are assets that can be converted into, you know, revenue. And so it will look at it over a period of time, and then, you know, it will offer it to the market for partners who are able to invest in them.
All right. Now, when you talk about 2021, mini 2020, the marginal and all the bid rounds that we've had, the question I would want to find out, which I'm sure is important to every Nigerian as well, is this how it is done globally, that people bid and these biddings fail, or these bids fail because those who did the bidding were not very lucid enough to get on site, or is this peculiar to Nigeria?
It's not peculiar to Nigeria. I think it's peculiar to the global oil and gas industry. Mm. Oil and gas industry is a highly capital intensive market. Everybody wants to play in it, largely because of the risks, what you need to get. I mean, you've heard it many times that, look, for an oil company to break even, if crude oil is sold at $13 or $14, they are still fine. Mm. And if I was ever wrong, you remember, I think, from about 5-6 years ago, when the global crude oil prices fall into that abysmal level of $7 or $6 in this world where we were in.
Mm.
And some of oil and gas companies were still around. You know, so it's a market where the returns are very, very high. The in capital injection is equally very high, and that is when you have quite a number of a mix of jokers and a mix of serious minded people.
Mm.
So globally, you know, when you put in bids, I think what's important here is the government or the regulator must institutionalize a mechanism where it's able to fish out those that are serious minded players and those that are, you know, jokers within the industry. So, for example, one of the documents that is required is a bank guarantee. Now, a bank guarantee, like you know, is an evidence of financial capacity.
Yeah.
But I think beyond just having a bank guarantee, one of the measures that I have proposed is that the regulator must also now insist that, look, that guarantee must be accompanied by a letter from the company on whose behalf that bank guarantee is issued to accept some form of liability in the unlikely event, you know, that the company does not perform. So the BG is not just let the bank also partake in the liability.
Mm.
And for any bank, and then you also give a limit or the criteria to the kind of bank. So you must talk about the Morgan Chases of this world. Now, if that kind of bank is able to give you a capital indemnity cover before you put in a bid, then you have to be a serious-minded person to put in a bid. Because if you put in the bid, and you win or you're successful with that bid, and you don't perform, then concessionaire can call that guarantee.
Okay.
And then the bank will be liable for it. There are many ways or measures by which, you know, a regulator can sift, you know, the bookers from the serious-minded people.
All right. And when you look at this, what you just said now seems very easily achievable. Just adding, making a request for a bank indemnity to prove that, yes, they are backing up the guarantee and they will also be passing away with some money. We've not done this at all. But and we've had failed biddings. What are we doing differently now, particularly this year, that will guarantee that we have less failed biddings or bids?
Let me start with the first part of what you said. That is it looks easily achievable. Kaode is not easily achievable. No bank, and I mean no bank, we're currently working on one which is being utterly difficult. No bank, except the bank is satisfied, one, on the returns of your business, two, is almost operating like a venture capitalist, which it is not, in your business, is part of your business, he understands the decision making before a bank will commit itself. Because what we're saying is that the bank will also part taking the liability in case there is any. And then, most importantly, the bank will act in a fiduciary role. It's almost difficult. Mm. It's not that it's impossible. There are banks that do it. Look, I've traveled 3 different countries looking for banks that will see the fiduciary position in respect of a particular transaction. We've not found. So it's but when you find, it means that that transaction is 100% bankable and the bank is able to support it. Now to what we are doing differently. I think we've recognized, you know, this fact that, you know, that there are quite a number of jokers that might come into the industry. And that is why, for me, it's pleasing to the mind to see that the federal government is, we're spending almost about a year, you know, sitting, doing, analyzing the different stages of the bid. What I have not seen, however, which is your question, I think you asked,
yes,
is government should also consider engaging a technical partner that will assist in the analysis of the bid. And that technical person, take for example elections.
Okay.
Why elections considered credible in some country and they are considered less credible in other countries? The reason is because during elections, international observers are allowed to partake or to observe elections. As a lawyer, NBA, and I've represented the Nigerian opposition at the national level a couple of times to also inspect or to observe elections, and we prepare our own observer report and submit to INEC at the end of the day. So I have not seen that here. I'm not saying it's not applicable. I'm not saying they have done it. It's not been anywhere that I have seen. And I think if the regulator considers engaging, so it's not enough to simply just engage a TGS, TGS, their partner, that warehouses data. Now, that is in the course of, you know, when you want to your due diligence. But that's for the benefit of the bidder. For the benefit of the market itself, I think that third party, technically savvy company that can inspect the process of the bid and can also assist you in terms of identifying who they consider credible and, you know, not credible. Now, their report might just be advisory. But for me, an expert report is not just advisory, the guidance document that the regulator carefully considered.
All right. And when you look at this bid round, how transparent has it been? How transparent is it now?
Okay. It's just starting. Like, you know, the round was opened on April 29, I beg your pardon. Mm-hmm. And first phase of it would close by tomorrow. I think tomorrow is May 10. And really, registration and recall will start by May 13. And so the timelines for doing for the entire bid process, I think, has been set out. Everybody has seen it. The requirement that must be met has also been set. And if you know how the things are done, it's almost similar, you know, how the NNPCL also selects its partners. So you put in all the envelopes in the same room, all the parties are there, and then you open it, you know, in front of everybody. Are there back-end operations to it? Yes, there may be. Back-end operations in the last few years and last few rounds that we have seen may have resulted in reasons why, as I think someone put it, some of the assets will fall into the hands of the big boys who don't use them for anything. Now, if we want to discontinue that, then there must be the elimination of any back-end operations. It must be purely on merit, and then let only those who not only pre-qualify, who qualify whether in terms of technical expertise and financial prowess, be the ones to walk the field. That way, it will even reduce, you know, the incidence of dispute where most of us lawyers
Okay, we need to wrap it up right now. But when you say back-end operation, I'm sure you're talking legal terms. To the layman, the average Nigerian, what do you mean by back-end operation? Because that sounds like something legit that we, you know.
Well, back-end operations sometimes may not necessarily illegal. And just not in the oil and gas sector, in most sectors. So you may want to characterize it as what I've earlier described as a discretionary award. But you see, when you are applying discretion in providing such awards, there are materials that must guide you. And one of such materials is evidence of past record. And so if I'm going to look, this particular company is already working on OML 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 in my country. And OML 8 and 9 contiguous to OML 1 to 7 that is working, and it's easy for this company to simply just extend the infrastructure that it has built, you know, on OMLs 1 to 7 into OMLs 8 and 9. Now, that sort of company, do I want to subject that kind of company to the rigorous exercise of having to go through the lengthy bid? I may or I may not. If I were to be the regulator, I probably would not, but I must satisfy myself that that company currently works OML 1 to 7 has the capacity and is not being stretched beyond limits to take on OML 8 and 9. Now, is there room for collaboration from that company with other parties? Yes, you can collaborate. And speaking about collaboration, that was one of the major failures of the past bid rounds. And the marginal field bid round. So you have, you know, regular bunching bedfellows together who have different ideologies, different technical ideas of how they want to work the field. Their sources of funding are also different. And then you just pull them together, you ask them, go and work this field together. Certainly that was not going to work.
Okay.
And so these are some of the lessons we've learned from the past and things that we do differently under this 2024 bid round.
All right, and so all those mistakes need to be corrected. But for clarity, the OML is Oil Marketing License and OPL is Oil Prospecting License. Can you expatiate more for those who are just getting into this, getting a grasp of this entire process? If you can do that for us in 1 minute.
Okay, so OPL is your entry level into the market, is Oil Prospecting License. You're prospecting for oil. Now, it doesn't mean, and I see that error all the time, it doesn't mean that oils gotten from OPLs cannot be sold. It can be sold. It just means that an OPL license, which is now PPL under the new 2021 Act, is not commercialized. Commercialization is when the oil has a reserve of about 10 million barrels. Now, once you can establish about 10 million barrels, then you can apply to convert it to a mining lease. Oil mining lease, that's an OML, which under the new 2021 Petroleum Industry Act is now called PML, Petroleum Mining Lease. So that's just the difference. And so PL is a commercial field. OPL is not a commercial field, but it doesn't mean that oil is not sold from it. Marginal field, on the other hand, which is the third part which you might want to ask me, is a subset of an OML. So by law, after a period of, I think, about 10 years or thereabout, you are mandated to relinquish 50% of your assets back to government. That 50%, most of the time, will be 50% of the part of your field or your block that you're not working on. And the reason why you're not working on them is because it is not commercial as far as you are concerned. Now, once it goes back to government, those may be some of the places where government also, I forgot to mention that, where government can get blocks to allocate for a bid round. You know, so once you relinquish it, government will now reallocate it, you know, to potential and qualified bidders who may be able to, who they are not as big, big players, so they will find that kind of 50%, you know, commercially viable to put investments in.
All right. Now, when you look at Nigeria and the bid round, is Nigeria attractive enough for the big players in this field?
Oh, certainly. Whether our onshore assets or our offshore assets, Nigeria is one of the fertile ground for you to do business in the Nigerian oil and gas industry. The returns are huge, but I must also add the risk is huge. The legal regulatory framework is not as stringent as you have in some other countries. The only challenge we have in Nigeria is that's relating to security. And that is, we can see that the big players, it's interesting that we passed a law in 2021 ostensibly to attract more investment. And it's also at that time that most of our big players are exiting their onshore assets.
Mm.
Because the onshore assets is becoming riddled with a lot of criminality. I was listening to Mele Kayari, the GMD of NNPCL recently. And, you know, he was telling me that the kind of theft that is being experienced in the oil and gas industry in recent times has not been. Projection in 2022 of 1.6 million barrels has dropped to hovering about 1.3 or thereabout. Our Transnembe pipeline, I understand, they have to shut down. I don't know whether it's been up back now. And that's a major pipeline. You know, so it's a combination of quite a number of things.
Mm, wow. So everybody is going, is it deep shore, deep sea, you call it now, leaving the onshore?
Oh, yes. So that's the deep water.
Yeah, deep water.
Let me use a very lay example. So, you know, the beach example, or you know, a swimming pool.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, in a swimming pool, there's that, you know, part where anybody, people like us who don't have the skill of swimming, we can play around the periphery of the waters. Yes. So that's almost like your onshore. Now, it's easy, you know, for thieves to come there. It's easy for people to harass you. It's easy for things to happen there. Now, imagine that you now go and site your asset at the deep end where only those who are skilled or lifeguard are able to get to. Now, it's difficult for you to go offshore into the deep water, you know, to go and, you know, conduct that kind of theft. It's almost impossible.
Mm.
Is it that it happened? Maybe very few. For most of what we have there are, you know, accidents on vessels, etc., and less oil theft.
All right. Is that the
challenge with that?
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Land on that.
So the challenges with that, though, might now be when you extract oil from there. Now, how you transport it? In the course of transportation, we also find that, you know, they plug in different things into the pipelines, and then they still steal some
exactly.
of it.
That's what I was coming to. There's no way you have all this extraction points for oil.
Correct.
Yeah. So, okay. So, either way, oil is still being stolen. And
Certainly.
You're not in the security space. I want to ask you what we can do to stem that. But,
I can offer an idea, okay, which I think I'm not sure is strange. So technology can do quite a number of things, and either we're not deploying technology enough, or we're so what do I mean? On pipeline, once you use good technology will tell you when or how crude oil is moving. It's just like an aeroplane that is flying. The pilot doesn't know anything in the air. It's just being guided by, you know, the sat-nav. So technology will tell you how crude oil is moving. Now, once you do it in a way where you can say in 1 kilometer to where crude oil is, once you discover any outlet or any opening, then that crude should be diverted into a proper crude oil channel. And so once crude oil is flowing through and those illegal connections have been discovered by technology, it will just divert the crude oil, you know, into another. So government itself must have exit points on its own pipelines. So once you discover that, look, there's those illegal connections, you just divert it. Okay. And I'm not sure it's new. Maybe government, why government have done it, I do not know. When I listened to the GMB, he sounded very helpless. I'm not sure, you know, he needed to be, because I know they've also deployed some kind of technology where they can monitor many things, you know, from the screen.
Mm. All right. Let me take you off for just 1 minute, because we need to bring this home now. We hear Nigeria, every time we hear this, that Nigeria is more of a gas production company than a crude country, rather, than a crude production country. We have more gas than crude. Now, the flaring of the gas in Nigeria, and the inadequacies of gas to the extent that we still import, what is going on there? Is this something you can handle in 1 minute?
Yeah, we'll do that in 1 minute. So two quick issues there. The first is the nature of our contracts before now. So our PAs have been such that unassociated gas have not been captured to be dealt with within your production sharing contracts. And so really, once you find associated gas in the cost of oil production, what you do is take the ones that you need for your continued production, and the others you have, you can flare them. The reason why flaring has become a lot more prevalent is that it costs you more to develop gas than to develop oil. And so when you follow the 1985 Alpha disaster, that was exactly what happened, you know, in the North Sea. You had a platform that was an oil platform that was being used for gas. So it's expensive to process gas. And that is why we find less. Now, is it that we can't process gas? No, we can. But at what price do we sell? So if process gas, for example, and I'm selling to on the West African gas pipeline to Angola, to Ghana, etc., I'm selling at $1.35. And you tell me that for domestic supply obligations or purposes, I must sell at a naira value. Every component of my gas production is dollarized. And so my investors have also brought in, you know, foreign currency. But the sales proceeds, if I'm meeting my domestic supply obligation, is going to be in naira. There's certainly an imbalance.
All right.
And so if we can shore up the cost, I mean, I know that we're doing some aggregation right around pricing of it. But if we can shore up the cost such that it's at the same level with what it costs me to put in the international market, then, you know, the pricing of gas or the production of gas becomes more attractive.
I can guarantee that many Nigerians will not like you for saying the cost of gas you go up this morning. But thank
you.
My
joy, as you always tell me, is to tell you as it is.
As it is, yes.
I'm not a government official.
Yeah.
I'm just a private sector.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And I would like to get you in the studio sometimes to probe more into this gas aspect and other aspects of the upstream, which we often overlook, and focus on the downstream. Do enjoy the rest of your morning, Adremi.
It will be my privilege.
Great.
Thank you.
Great.
Your favorite Lagos Talks podcasts are now available on all online podcast platforms. Simply search for Lagos Talks 913 on your preferred podcast platform. Lagos Talks 91.3.
Join the conversation.